9:30, we'll call this first meeting of the Port of Port Townsend Public Workshop for Wednesday, October the 14th, order. And the agenda today is a presentation of the revised draft of the 2016 operating budget and continued discussions.
Okay, so I just wanted to start with stating the obvious, and that is that I know as the budget process goes, there's always a lot of questions, not just from the commission, but from constituents, and there's no way I could possibly know all the answers, you know, as we sit here, but I'll be glad to respond later on the questions that I can answer. So you'll have the packet with the revised budget, updated budget. Also wanted to let you know that we did meet, as you recommended, with the department heads and got their input. It is kind of late in the game, but we also talked about starting this whole process earlier next year and getting them more involved in the process so they can have a little bit more input. We could probably need, you know, some education for them too, you know, learning about the process. So they're all interested in that. So some of the things that we discussed for Morgan and Point Hudson, they both need new signage.
Pardon me?
New signage.
Oh, my.
And Morage also and Point Hudson want to increase the shower rates. Point Hudson wants to increase the kayak lower rack rates. Morage and Point Hudson need more dock carts. A lot of them are being taken. So we're talking about possibly locking them up at night. And Point Hudson also is suggesting increasing the dry dock RV sites to $30 a night. It's currently
The which sites?
Dry dock.
The dry sites.
The dry sites.
Without a power.
It's not a dock, sorry.
Water.
Do we have any of those?
There are two dry sites right on the.
Oh.
It's not a huge.
Mm-hmm.
A yard, they're talking about implementing a flat fee for blocking off-port property. They're also talking about increasing the tarp fees for larger tarps. Basically, that's because of the environmental requirements. And putting that as part of the haul-out fee. Also for the yard, increasing the operating supplies line item for those larger costs. And then also implementing an increased fee for the work float to $2 a foot per day for the 2-week max stay. And finally for the yard, discuss the need to replace the media for the stormwater system. You know that is a capital expense, so that's not really part of this budget. And then maintenance, our discussions with maintenance were pretty much capital. So it didn't really have to do with this budget. Although one thing, you know, that's not going to be part of the capital facilities plan is that they need new trucks. So they were suggesting maybe $50,000 for the next couple of years so that they can get some more trucks and replacement trucks. And the other thing the maintenance talked about was that they feel like they're criticized for not spending out their budget. And we went on to discuss how lots of times they're at the money and the time spent in their department goes towards capital work. And so it doesn't get reflected in the operating budget. So what I suggested, something that we could do next year or think about doing if you're interested, is doing a mid-year review of the budget for maintenance and see, you know, like how much time has gone towards capital and maybe adjusting the budget in that regard. That way it would help them kind of get a better sense of, you know, what's capital, what's just everyday kind of maintenance. And it would also be good, it would be good for the commission, I think, you know, vantage point, and also for constituents to see what our maintenance department does, you know, capital-wise. Because there's minor capital projects they do that, you know, don't get seen in the operating. Let's see. So with all those discussions, all the comments that I mentioned with the departments, the only thing that I changed or revised in this budget relating to that was the increase in the tarp fees, you know, as far as the cost to the port, our costs. I didn't increase the revenues, any of the suggestions that they made, because we'd like your input on that before we go forward.
So were they asked about any expense reductions that they could think of? Did they offer any? I kind of imagine not, but were they asked about that?
They didn't really have any. I think it's because it's a big process to them. They're really not that comfortable.
So was it part of the dialogue?
Yeah. But I think too, and this kind of goes back to the education piece with working with them, is that, you know, I hand them reports every month or when I get them the month ends done, just like you guys get. But I've not sit down with them and gone over it and said, what do you think? What's going on here? I don't know if that's ever been done with them. You know, I don't know whether they've just been expected to kind of understand it and ask questions as needed, but maybe they need to, we need to have like a little workshop or something.
I think that's a great idea.
Kind of look at it and analyze it and...
They should own it too.
Yeah, sure.
So was it your sense that these kind of were new? Like, in other words, they hadn't actually come up and talked to you on their own, so had they not been doing it in the past really as much? Is this something new to them, you think, coming up and meeting with you and giving recommendations for the budget process?
You know, it was new for me with them, mm-hmm. but I don't know historically whether that happened. I didn't ask them.
So then we talked about some things earlier, and that was the costs of the haul out being less than what we actually pay for it. Would that reflected in this revised budget?
No.
So a couple of things. Like, we do weekly staff meetings, which commissioners don't participate in. I'm sure issues come up in weekly staff meetings. I mean, you have department heads there. Right. And they say, well, you know, we're going to spend a ton of money fixing this, or, you know, Tammy's not able to get something done that she needs to get done, so maybe she needs to juggle manpower. Does that come up? I mean, there must...
It's mainly operational, not financial. Mm-hmm. So it's because a lot of our projects require a different department participation. Mm. It's more coordinated, more with maintenance, with the yard, than it is financial. But we could include financial component to that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, the idea of weekly meetings or something like that, it might be more productive just to wrap it into what we already have going on with the staff meetings. How about, you know, particularly with maintenance, I mean, do you feel from a staff perspective that they have a clear understanding of what's maintenance and what's capital? And
we just redefine that as we've gone through finance directors over the past few years. Every finance director has a little different idea. Mm-hmm. I think Eric and Abigail have really pinned it down to saying anything over $15,000 that furthers the longevity of the asset is going to be capitalized. Mm. But we have, you know, issues like Abigail and I talked yesterday, the stormwater cleaning. Obviously, from a financial point of view, that should be capitalized, but it's a two-year time frame, so you can't really capitalize a two-year asset. So
I mean, it's a reoccurring.
There are some things that may or may not be capital that are over that $15,000. Traditionally, in the old days when Don Taylor was here, we would capitalize it to $50,000. So now we're down to $15,000. What Abigail said is true. I mean, the maintenance staff has done yeoman work on redoing Hudson offices, they've redone the mortgage office here, the yard office. Those are all capital things that they spend a lot of time on, this building. So that doesn't get reflected in the operating budget. So we need a better way to communicate those kind of projects that they're doing.
Or the operating results. Because when it's a WIP, a work in progress, that money goes into like a holding account until the project is done, then it gets capitalized and goes on the balance sheet. So that's why it doesn't get reflected in the operating statement. You're going, well, why didn't they spend the money? Well, they have, but it wasn't operating.
So maybe what we ought to be considering is lowering their actual maintenance account and upping what we're spending on capital, if we're capitalizing.
I think Abigail's suggesting that we do a mid-year or even a quarterly reassessment of where we are and should we move stuff from capital or to capital.
Right.
From that, I think that's a good way to look at it.
And once the capital facilities plan and it's done, and, you know, we've kind of determined, you know, what projects we're gonna do moving forward, I think we'll have a better idea too, as far as that goes.
So the other thing is, if you're, so if Larry's out there replacing whalers on C and D or something like that, and he's spending $20,000 to do it, you're gonna reflect that as a capital cost. So then, are you gonna adjust the asset value of C and D dock to reflect the increased value, because we just, I mean, that's now, that's an asset value increase that we just did, so the balance sheet should reflect that, just like we improved this building, so this building went from a value of $40,000 to $80,000. So that's yes?
And then adjust the depreciation schedule.
Right.
Yeah, if I could, though, in direct response to your original question, I think maintenance staff, certainly Larry Ozzie, understands the distinction between routine and ordinary maintenance and capital maintenance quite clearly. In fact, you know, drive kind of codification of the distinction. And I think the hope and expectation is that as we get better at the capital side and delineating projects and prioritizing them, that he's going to have the direction that he needs, that it's, you know, rather than undertaking projects that really aren't clearly reflected anywhere, that they will be identified as a commission priority that we're going to undertake in the upcoming year, and the maintenance staff for, in some instances will undertake at least components of those projects that are of a scale that we would contract out.
I think it'll help too that with the survey, preliminary survey report, looking, you know, just through some of the line item stuff of Point Hudson buildings and the different things that we've got coming, like slate roofs, and we're gonna replace that. So it's really easy to see, I mean, there's a lot of smaller items on those pages that are obviously gonna be capital expenses. So it'll be easy to see, instead of what maybe looks like it might be a maintenance issue, like replacing a gutter on our building, for instance, that's actually gonna be a capital expense. So, yeah.
There is an RCW we need to be mindful of, and any project over $30,000, even if we look to do it, we have to bid it out to make sure that the private contractor can't do it cheaper than we do. So we just need to be mindful of that distinction in the bidding.
There's another thing that we need to be clear on too, and that is the threshold for capitalizing something. I mean, I think from the finance director's perspective, $15,000 and above gets capitalized. However, you know, the executive director's spending authority is 25. So there's some question as to what that threshold should be for purposes of identifying projects for inclusion within the capital facilities plan, whether that's 15 or 25.
What's the, how about on the yard with the blocking off property? What's that, like going over to co-op or?
So right now, you know, we have quite a few boats, I don't have the number, but it's here somewhere, boats that we block on property, not only by the Port of Wales, owned by the port, but leads to some other person, co-op's a prime example. We prorate that blocking charge, and with the increase in turn of boats recently, we're seeing that we're charging $3 for blocking. Well, it costs us more than $3 to rent that equipment, and the blocks and the stands and everything else. So what Terry's proposing, actually Shannon too, because she has to do all the bookwork on that proration, is just to do a standard off-port property blocking fee based on linear feet of the boat. A 50-foot boat is X per month. It doesn't matter if it's there for 4 days or 30 days, that's split. It would streamline billing, and I think in the long run would help us. Because those jack stands and blocks are really getting quite expensive.
When you say blocking, you're not talking about lifting it up, moving around, saying painted, you're talking about just the block?
The blocking material, yeah. We're still paying for the hollow, it's just, you know, the big timbers underneath, the eco blocks and all the jack stands, those are all ours. And those businesses rent them from us. But the proration has been just crazy to figure out.
So like the, I guess the elephant in the room is, and there's been a lot of email about it, is the org chart and the amount of, you know, labor as being one of our bigger costs here. When you look at the org chart, and especially with all the different department heads, there's no way we're gonna shrink it down. I mean, when you look at what's going on in the yard, what's going on in Morge, Point Hudson, we're.
We can shrink, but again, level of service is gonna suffer, so that'll be the decision.
Well, that's an important one, I'll go ahead.
What is, how would we shrink? I mean, if we said as a commission, if we said, okay, we want a lower level of service in order to save money, how would you see that happening?
We'd have to do a full analysis with the department managers to see. Obviously, most of our staff feels they're pretty stressed out right now. So we need to make some serious cuts in service if we're gonna start losing people. So I'd like to meet with the managers and have, come up with a plan if the commission so desires.
Yeah, I would.
I was gonna say, that'd be good. How much of an impact is now that Gold Star is shut down? Is that gonna be for our yard? And what sort of a void does that create?
Well, hopefully November 1, we'll have a tenant in that building, so it won't be a void. But it could be big. They were our biggest haul-out customer. And so that will have an impact.
And the tough thing is gonna be too, is if you're gonna be cutting staff and lowering services, you're gonna be looking at lower revenues and how that gets determined.
Yeah, that's.
I'm not really sure, so.
That's exactly the term.
That would have to be in the equation.
Well, that's right. A while back, I was asking you about if there was a way to correlate manning levels, staffing levels, I should say, to level of service. If there was a way to have this many employees represents this level of service for the yard in general. See what I'm saying?
Right, yeah, you mentioned a metric or something that you saw or.
Yeah, the county does it. Actually, the county does it. It's available online, I think. The Public Works does it.
Yeah, I've been mentioning this in forums and stuff, that if you cut levels of service too much, then you cut your revenue because there's nobody there to haul the boat down on the weekend or to take the reservation at the marina office. And so I think what might be useful is when going back to these department heads and asking them about evaluating their manning capabilities, also at the same time ask them if there's another way that they, without cutting services as far as personnel are concerned, if they can think of other economies they can make that wouldn't be cutting a service that they could see, like if they could just get 5% through other means. And of course, they're the only ones that know what other means they have available to cut. I think that would be a good metric that have actually could have been brought up when they were talking with you the first time, but they probably didn't, you know, think about, oh, I need more money for this, but then, oh, I need less money for that. You know, that could be brought up. We're looking for how you could use less money.
Right, right. And I think the idea of meeting with department heads and kind of educating them in that whole process, so they're thinking that way, and they come to the staff meeting and say, you know, I looked at my report and I need this, but I'm looking at my budget, you know, then that would get them into that process. I'm not sure about doing all that, you know,
before the budget.
I don't think it's possible because of the time frame. And when you mentioned Public Works, what are you talking about exactly? Are you talking about utilities? Are you talking about projects or?
No, I'm talking about like.
Because Public Works could be utilities like garbage and.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so those are utilities, which we don't provide utilities. It's different. We're like.
No, I was referencing how they work their budget in regards to, you know, incorporating a managed staffing level associated with a certain level of service. That's all I was referencing.
Okay. Kind of like maintaining part-time people.
So you need to say
you're on, you're off.
Yeah.
Which we kind of already do. I mean, you have summer staff. And
one of the things the Port of Anacortes does, it's interesting, is they take their revenue by employee, and that's published on their website. And what you've been saying, I haven't run the numbers, but I would say that we're a pretty lean staff, and we produce quite a bit for the number of people we have. But it's a good exercise, and I'd be happy to talk to the managers about what their recommendation would be.
I think it would be good, too, for, you know, our constituents, too, to see that, because I've certainly, as I've talked to different ports, and I've talked to a few of them this year, that we do seem lean. So I think that would be one way to definitely demonstrate that a little bit.
So in this particular budget draft, with some assistance of some people that have Excel spreadsheets and stuff that I don't have, I was looking at I was trying to annualize the 2015 budget revenues and expenses. Basically, we have up through July. And so taking July and multiplying it by 7/12, I came up with some numbers. And those numbers just don't really seem to go along in line with 2014 and our 2016 budget. Essentially, if you go from 2014 to 20, and you guys aren't gonna have this, this is something that's not on there unless you pull it out. If you take the 2015 Julys.
Are you looking at the consolidated?
I was looking at a different spreadsheet.
Right,
no.
But when you look at.
Oh, I'm taking the draft operating budget that we got last night.
Okay.
Like the first pages?
No, that would be, let's go to 5,760,000 on the 2014 actual.
That's total operating revenue.
Yeah, what page is that on? Well. Yeah, on the 2014 actual, we had 5,760,000 on operating expenses, 4,927,000 on revenues.
You're looking at the consolidated page for all facilities. What I see here is 2016. 5,189,000. So I'm not sure what you're looking at.
So Melinda, you're the one that built this spreadsheet. Could you tell me where those figures came from? Where you got those?
Yes, from the Wisdom Tree
I'm looking at the. We're looking at the 2014 actuals, the 2015 budget, the 2015 year to date, and then the 2015 estimated that go to make the 2016 budget. The 2014 actuals, let's see,
was 4,850,000.
Yeah, the operating.
Unfortunately.
This is a different one. This is the one that we just got, right?
Yeah, it's not the same as the last budget. Unfortunately, some of the prior years aren't exactly the same. But the idea was that if you looked at 2014 total operating expenses, they were somewhere around 5.7 million.
Yeah,
you know,
including depreciation.
And so, and that's why you can't pull it directly, because it is including depreciation. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the 2016 budget. Or actually, if you look at trying to annualize 2015, it looks like there must be a large expense in the third or fourth quarter, because when we annualize it, it looks like it's about 400,000 less than what we were budgeting. And so the question is, what kind of an expense, does anyone know what kind of expense we normally incur in that period?
We missed debt service in November and December.
So that's the.
Yeah, I know at least one of them is like 226,000.
Okay.
But Were you grabbing numbers from the first draft budget or the second draft?
The 2016 numbers from the second draft.
Okay.
So our business isn't linear, so we can't take 7/12.
Right, that's what I was trying to figure out.
There's a way to look at it, but it doesn't always.
It doesn't work that way.
Right, that's what we're trying to figure out, is how can we get that information so that we can.
Could I make a suggestion? I mean, this is really good analysis and everything, but when you start a budget process, what I think would be really helpful, you would estimate 2015. You got a budget and you got the prior year actuals, 2014. And Jim was talking about the seasonality factors that weighed into it. But if the experts could then take the budget and the actual so far through June or July, whatever is available, and annualize it better than just taking, you know, multiplying it times two or whatever the factor would be, that you'd have a really good starting point for estimating 2016. And then you could say revenues from 2016 compared to 2015 estimate are $100,000 increase. Expenses are a $200,000 increase. So you know, if that's the case, if expenses are going up to 200,000, revenue is only going up 100,000, then you're going to have a shortfall of $100,000. And then you'd have to go back and analyze things and see where you could either increase revenue or decrease costs. And really,
but there is a problem. I mean, like I met with Abby, we went through, this is the draft from the last meeting, right? Not our current draft, but the one she handed out prior. And, you know, we looked at, there were a couple of issues where, you know, I said, boy, that's interesting how you got to that 2016 number. How'd you do that? And you know, we had to kind of backtrack a little bit. And from that, you know, there's kind of like, well, really, do you really think that's going to happen? Well, maybe not. And so there is a process that does happen.
Right. It's just not visible on the show.
Yeah, right.
Where, you know, someone like a commissioner or a citizen looking at it wouldn't be able to figure it out, because we know about 1% of what, you know, Jim and Abigail and everybody else knows that works here in the fort.
Right.
And so that was my only suggestion, is that it would make it easier if you had a benchmark 2015 latest estimate. And I know, like in business, I shouldn't compare the port to business, but they do updates of budgets all the time. And they do a fourth quarter budget update. They did a third quarter, second quarter. They're always projecting out what the year is going to be. And that's what I'm saying, is that how do you really project what 2016 is going to be unless you do a good job of estimating 2015. And like last meeting, Pete, you asked really good questions. All right, what is our revenue going up? What are our costs going up? And that, to me, that's the crux of the whole thing right there, is what are we faced in terms of cost increases, and what do we think we can get away with without hurting competition, raise revenues by, and then make a decision, okay, what are we going to do now? You know, if it's out of whack, if it looks really good, then I would say no problem. In this budget right here, I don't think it looks real good.
Yeah.
And so you've never had a loss in a budget, or excuse me, in the last 5 years. I went back and looked at all the audit reports, and you've had income every year. Even 2014 had $11,000 income. That was like the worst year out of the whole group. And then for this year, to predict $104,000 net loss, I think that's just telling you got to go back to the drawing board and look at things.
So, Abigail, you provide a monthly statement to the commissioners, a reconciliation, which gives us projections.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should just make those documents available online so the public can look every month, because you make projections in that as far as where we are, the percentage of budget, what we're looking at in the future.
Well, but it doesn't adjust the budget, which is what he's talking about too.
Right, it doesn't, but at least it's transparent and it shows everybody where we are.
Of the budget and where we are in the year, and which is a linear look. But I just wanted to say too, as far as what you were saying with 2015 estimating, that's the way that I approached 2016. I thought about doing that, and unfortunately, the writer, the reporting system that we have, which is great and very powerful, it's time consuming to write a report. So it's not like plugging stuff into Excel. It's better than that in the sense that it'll be more reliable because it's drawing directly from the accounting system, what we put into the budget in the accounting system, as well as what's real numbers, actual costs and revenues in the accounting system. So in that way, it's a better report than using Excel, but it's also time consuming to write a report. And as it was, I had to edit this report in order to get it up and running. So it's time. It's time related, as far as that goes. But with 2016, that's what I did, is I looked at, you know, the actuals. I looked at the last year's actuals for the seasonality. You know, looked at how much we had made this year as compared to last year at this time. And that's why I made these adjustments where I did in the second draft, where you'll see various ups and downs in costs and revenues.
Well, it was real illuminating to me when we had the times for the bonds to be paid off. So you can kind of look at the ahead of years to see what our debt service is going to be. Well, I think it would be equally as illuminating if we knew, for example, the $200,000 payment to the for the bond in November that happened, so that you could figure out, oh yeah, we do have a big chunk coming up later on. Because when you look at the monthlies with your, we're this far through the year and we've spent this much percent of it, you know, that doesn't really take into account the seasonal differences, like the big things that come up at the end of the year. So it's a little misleading, or at least it's confusing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you wouldn't see it in operating because
right.
of the principal payment, but yeah.
One of the, you know, couple things. I think Amy did an excellent job of predicting. She did, when you go back and look at budget versus actual, she did quite well in what she came up with. And, you know, there is an element of trust too, that you got to throw the dart and say, okay, Abby's doing a pretty good job of looking at line items and saying, I think she's close. And so I don't think we've had a year where the budget was wildly off in any one particular item from an actual. Do you think that's true, Ron? Just, I mean, you've looked at these numbers a lot,
well,
too.
I just think that, I look at 2013 to 2016. If you look at total operating revenue, $4.7 million in 2013 to $5.1 million in 2016, that looks like a really conservative number. And maybe that is the number, I really don't know, but if that's all the revenue that you're gonna generate over 2013 going to 2016, wow, that means you gotta really look at your cost structure. Because if revenue is so constrained, you're gonna be like one of these old companies that can't increase their market share, and actually their market share is going down. And so their revenue is not increasing. It's barely above being flat. And if that's the case, then, and there's nothing you can do, and you can't find new revenue sources, you know, bring in new customers and never another industry or something like that, then you gotta really look at your expenses. How can you cut expenses? And I hate to even say this because, you know, a third or 40% of the budget are people, live people that are working in our community. And when you start saying cut expenses, eventually it gets around to, you know, cutting people. And I just abhor that, you know. Because the whole idea of the port is to generate economic activity. And if we turn around and cut payrolls to save money, you know, how are we helping economic, you know, now there's a family that's unemployed, and what's the impact on that?
And that was this exact discussion, you know, right below what you're talking about is the next three line items, salaries, payroll, and employee benefits. And that is where you see the highest ramping up on the curve. And it's concerning, especially the employee benefits, and that's healthcare, you know, and it's like, wow, I mean, it's.
We can't cut those unless we cut employees. And then we're back to what Abigail said. You start cutting employees and you start cutting your revenue because you don't have enough people to do the job.
Well, and it kind of gets back to the whole revenue thing. This is with no rate increases. And I don't know any place that doesn't raise their rates.
It's CPI.
Yes, CPI. But I mean, so to just talk about, we're just going to cut our expenses into profit. I don't know how realistic that is. Especially because, I mean, I'm really not aware in my everyday life of anything that's going down in place. So, I mean, I know that's hard to do and nobody likes rate increases. I mean, I'm a consumer, I get rate increases and I don't always like it, but it's the nature of our company. So that's something, the other piece that needs to be looked at.
So I think we need to start having our rate increase discussion sooner than later. I've been hearing a lot about it on the campaign. And of course, there was an article in the PDN this morning about our competitors, which make up the market. Port Angeles is going to be doing a rate increase here too. So, and that's what's coming right up, I guess.
Yeah. Huh? Well, this is the potential percentage rate increases. What it would look like on our bottom line. The first column is what's in the budget now. So the first column should be the numbers that are in the budget now, although I realize now we're going to. But that's the 2% CPI, and then the 1% increase, 2%, 3%, 5%, and then at the bottom shows the total revenue and the rate increase total, the incremental of what it would actually add to total revenues. And this is just a similar look to the last spreadsheet, but organized a little differently, so hopefully it's a little easier to look at.
What's wrong in the permanent mortgage?
I didn't increase the dollar amount in the first column.
See, what's interesting here, right here, so you could take, if you take, kind of go across the board and say employee benefits have been rising 10% each year, 2013, 14, 15, and projected 16 is actually 20% raise. If we raise rate CPI plus 4%, that's 140,000. That'll, if you put that against the 2016 employee benefit raise, that'll get us just down to a normal 10% increase. That won't even stem it. That'll just slow it down a little bit. So that's kind of the reality of the numbers.
So we're basing these rate increases on just percentages above where we are right now.
Right.
And so I'm thinking that what we really need to do is figure out what our market is. Figuring out the market might be substantially different than just an incremental increase where we are. Mm-hmm. And figuring out a market rate is a kind of a difficult thing. But I think that we can just look right around us. Our market, just from the ports, the facilities around here, I'm not sure if anyone's actually figured out what that percentage would be between us and SWIM and us and Havelock and us and Port Ludlow and all those things. I think that might be what we need to do is to figure out our actual place. And the market isn't, I think I was operating under the false impression last year, market isn't just an average of all of the rates that are in our market area. That's just an average of what is here, but that doesn't determine the market. If we're in an area that people like to come, we have a higher market rate than an area where people don't like to come. You know, if you don't want to go to Port Angeles for some reason, you don't go there, even if they're cheaper. If you want to come to Port Townsend, you come here even if it's more expensive. So figuring out the real market rate is, I think, more appropriate to figuring out instead of just where we are now plus some percentage. And getting to that, I think, is an important thing that we need to do. I've been hearing it from a lot of people that we should be being market-driven. And like I said, that article in the PDN this morning indicated that they finally realized that too. Being the cheapest in Port Angeles isn't working for them. They're trying to figure out how to market, what their market is.
You're right. I think it'd be more meaningful to look at more in depth at the rates themselves rather than.
Well, we went through that exercise last year.
And that would happen.
Melinda?
Yeah. Can I just, one thing that surprised me, I don't think we went through this. I mean, I remember the discussions last year. The fact that in rural Orange, certain people kind of jumped out of line because they paid a 25% premium on their mortgage rate. But I guess you're trying to stop that now, trying to kind of boot them out, saying that's only supposed to be for a month or two at a time. And yet, in fact, people that have paid that 25% premium for
years.
Years. Yeah. And I, you know, I think that is a very powerful.
Yeah.
The market rate should be. I mean, people are willing to pay a 25% premium. It sounds
like a great deal. Point Hudson RVs are the same way. If you kind of look at the growth in RV nights at Point Hudson, you know, I mean, we're doing this thing as across the board at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I know Jim and I have talked about it, but I mean, maybe that should go up by 10%, you know, and so that's a. And then that would offset something that would maybe go up by 1%.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was getting at, is that last year, the thing that we were doing was not determining our market rate. We were determining what our market was, and that's basically the Puget Sound of figuring out an average rate. But that doesn't take into account anything like, do people really want to come here, or do they want to come here? And you can only tell that by figuring out what the market will bear. And basically, we didn't do that. It's obvious because we still have a huge occupancy rate and a huge waiting list, and we're lower than all of our surrounding neighbors for the rates. And so I think we need to take a better look at instead of just figuring out the median for our market, which is not the same as market rate, we need to figure out more accurately our market, what the market rate is for here. And then, like Pete says, that might be instead of a 2, 3, or 4% increase, it might be a bigger increase to get us to the market rate, and then we'll actually be able to make some headway on the rest of the stuff.
And I think another thing just to keep in mind is, you know, when people talk percentages, like we're going to raise the rates 5%, it's like, God, that sounds like so much. But in dollar value, that can often be like 50 cents. So it's almost more meaningful sometimes, depending on what rates you're talking about, to just talk about the dollar value rather than saying, you know, we're going to go up 10%. For an RV site, could be $5. Well, $5, that's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So we should keep that in mind too when we talk about rate increases.
So we're still doing the monthly discount in the heavy haul out, correct?
After 90 days.
Yeah. Well, after 90 days.
Yeah, after 90 days.
Yeah. George has
something. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you have something?
Well, I apologize for the. When you're talking about mortgage rates, please consider the huge waiting list that we have. That should be a major factor in how you determine rates if you indeed want to go to a market-driven rate.
Yeah. Which makes a good point, if I could, and I see both sides of this coin. Here we have a waiting list. In the yard, we don't necessarily have a waiting list. We don't necessarily have a waiting list for RVs, so we can outprice the market. So we have to be cognizant that if we go up $5 an RV, it's just the same.
Yeah.
Those people may go somewhere else and will lose money in the long run. So that's a tiering thing. Same in the yard, people are going to look for different options. I remember an article, I can't remember what newspaper, I think the Leader published it. They interviewed people in our yard, asked them why they came to Point Hudson or Port Townsend, and they said you're the cheapest yard. So that's a drawing thing for us, and we need to be cognizant. That's why people come here, is our rates are low. So if we raise them to Seattle rates, all of a sudden, we may lose business.
So just to counterpoint that, though, the yard, isn't the yard driven by what the travel lift can pull? I mean, if I'm scheduling, I usually have to schedule. I mean, the choke point is how many boats we can get out across the dock.
Depending on the time of year.
That's yeah. And then on the RV, I mean, would they ever create a, I mean, there's only a finite number of spaces, so it's not like, you don't really have a waiting list, do you?
No.
Right.
So that's the issue. I just don't want to price ourselves out of that
right.
market where people are going to a different place. Same as Point Hudson Moorage, I mean, we're approaching Friday Harbor rates, and we've got to be cognizant of maybe losing people going to Friday Harbor for their vacation instead of coming.
Fortunately, we have the straits to slow them down.
Yes, well, I think that in order to determine those rates, we have to get on some kind of a program where we raise it incrementally until we discern some sort of a perceptible drop. Because if you don't do that, you're never going to know where you're at. I know that I've been traveling, oh, I haven't this year, I've been busy, but every time I take off in my little RV, I see that every year, an extra $5 to go anywhere you want to go to. So do we have any surveys of just our local area here for mortgage rates?
I believe the Mortgage Tenants Union just put one up on their website.
Well, I mean, there's some inaccuracies there.
But certainly as four marinas, I mean, we can mm-hmm. get that in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. We are, if you talk to Bob Wise, for instance, who's a very good businessman who owns Port Hadlock, he will tell you that we are the market driver. He wants to be 3% higher than we are. So if we go up, he's going to go up. So, and I think that's going to be the same no matter where. That's the strategy. If you look at Squim's rates are exactly 2% above each one of our categories. So they do that for a reason.
Yeah, we can do that with Victoria Clipper. I mean, we stay X number percent above Clipper.
Hmm. I didn't know that.
So, would you like us to get comparative rates for mortgage and comparative rates for RVs?
Yeah, well, I think that obviously if Squim's full and if Hadlock's full and if we're full, that we realize that we need to figure out what our market is, and basically what the market will bear is what the market will bear. And I'm not sure how much we can rely on Port Angeles Boat Haven, because they're actively trying to get people to go in there because their boat haven is quite empty. And so of course you can't really gauge it with somebody that's got a fire sale. But we should get some ideas so that we can figure out if what our raise should be to be market. I think everyone here agrees that we should be charging the market rate, right? What do you think?
Well, I think that there's some different opinions on determining what the market rate truly is.
Right.
You know, and plus we have other elements, you know, that we're responsible for, you know, in our strategic plan that includes making this facility accessible to our community. And I don't want to see that be ignored.
Well, accessibility to a community, I mean, the community.
Affordability, which is inclusive of affordability. So just to go and charge whatever the market's going to bear, I think is ignoring some other elements in our strategic plan that we should consider.
Melinda?
I heard that before. And so the port and in its economic development really needs to get the best rate of return for its assets so that we're not so physically constrained that we can't do true economic development for our rest of the community for the other, you know, 29,000 of us that would like to see something else coming with our tax dollars.
Ron?
I just, you know, want to remind everybody that when we talk about keeping rates low for the people that really can't afford their slips right now and a rate increase, but really are, we got to think in terms of what it costs to run a marina and steel and concrete and floats and all the things that make up the material that you build the marina with cost more here than they do in Seattle. Seattle gets huge buys because of their economic power. We're out there, you know, like Swim or some of these other smaller ports buying. And so there's no savings. Actually, it's more expensive here to have a marina than it is in Seattle. But then when we look at Seattle, I'm not saying we should have Seattle's rates at all. That's ridiculous. But what I'm saying is we're forgetting that anything we build over water is going to wear out very quickly, and it's going to be very costly. And the problem is, for the last 10 or 15 years, the costs are exceeding the revenue. And every year, you get further and further behind. And I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, if we keep going this way, we're going to run out of money. And maybe you want to have the taxpayers pay more. Right now, they're going to pay $940,000 a year in property taxes. Maybe you want to go to them and say, let's double it. Let's get $1.8 million. And that will cover, you know, 30 or 40 people in the marina that can't afford to pay their mortgage fees because right now they're so strapped, they can't take an increase. So let's get the property tax payers to pay for that. And that's sort of what we're saying when we say we want to keep our rates low, because it's not working. We got to do something different. And I'm not saying you're wrong or I'm right or anything. I'm just laying it out that, you know, algebraically, this thing is not balanced. And we are losing money year after year after year because we have never passed on rate increases. In the shipyard, it's a different story because basically you have all these jobs in there that are generating income for people's families, for the businesses in this area, and it's a really important factor. And you can make a mistake there, and it's really not going to hurt you that much. But if you make a mistake in the marina year after year, it is going to hurt you. And
that's where I was going to go next. So, like Don, you're sitting there, and Jim, what do you guys think? Like ship rates and yard rates and what's the scoop with guys pulling out? Are they like never coming back? They're happy? I don't care.
Been some disappointments this year with the increases that happened last year. I suspect we will probably see a bit of repercussion of that. People won't come back.
You're talking about yard rates?
Yes. Poor fishing season this year. Increased yard rates, that might make a decision for somebody, whether they just plan to further work or go somewhere else or whatever. You're talking about mooring rates quite a bit. I'm thinking, in the time I've been here, I've watched all the fish boats go away to now the commercial basin getting filled up again. Start raising those rates, your market rates, Fisherman's Terminal in Seattle, you're not going to go down to their rate for commercial fishermen.
We actually are the rate.
Are we?
Yeah, $6.25 we charge for commercial fishermen. That was a commission decision in the last commission that we would keep our rates exactly the fishermen.
Okay, so if it goes up, I mean, if they're part of that equation, we might see some of those fishermen go away, which also means work calling down the yard. So I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't think that there's an easy decision you're making, but I don't see it all based on the business model as being the best way to look at it. Yeah.
George?
As a citizen activist, very much involved in looking at the Finally, I don't think the idea that raising property tax to subsidize mortgage or haul out the yard is going to fly down county. This is institutionalizing polarity between Port Townsend and the rest of the county. I would seriously consider, or I would suggest you not up the rates for that purpose. Now, if you want up the rates for economic development, I think that would fly.
Tax rates you're talking about?
Pardon me?
Tax rates, not mortgage.
That's right, the tax rate. Would fly in say, Quilcene, in Port Hadlock, Chimicum, providing that they can see that the port is working at the other sectors of our economy. But to raise it for subsidizing mortgage, I think, is not going to go well.
Well, and we can't do that. We can't just say, we're going to up the property taxes. We can't do that.
No.
The only way we could get more taxes if we do the IDD, and that's strictly for development. It's not for... So that's not even an option, even though I know you were suggesting for different reasons. The other thing I just wanted to say about the yard increases from last year, I don't know for sure, because I wasn't here, but I'm thinking some of it has to do with environmental. And that's not going to go away. And if you're not unique in that respect, you know, every port, you know, each town is having to deal with environmental impact of their creatures, you know, clean water and the rules. So, and the costs are going to go up.
I think the cost, I'm sorry.
I understand that, that the costs will go up. I think that the marine trade probably is on board with that, that those costs go up. But we're also seeing boatyards close all around Puget Sound because of that also.
One of our big customers is Alaska. Alaska doesn't have the restrictions we have. So a lot of that is a decision. Do I travel 1,000 miles to get here, or do I stay in Alaska and do the work? So, and that's always been a problem with us.
So, can you, I should know this, and I'm just seeing this. How does that work with environmental on the budget? Because you're changing revenue into, you're moving environmental revenue somewhere else?
So, on the initial budget, what we did was we allocated the cost of the environmental department to the highest users, basically. Mm-hmm. And then it was suggested that instead we just allocate their salaries. So that's what we did. So it lowered the costs in each department because the allocation was not as high as the salary costs.
Okay.
Last year we were doing a double hit. We were charging the customer an environmental fee, and then when our environmental people were working in the yard, they were charging the yard. So the yard was getting penalized without the income. So all we've done is we put the income where it's generated, and the environmental people can still charge their time against that department. It's more transparent, it's easier to understand. So every department, as you can see, has an environmental salary component as well as a maintenance.
That's going to be kind of tough because I view that one kind of like the employee benefits with the health care. I mean, it's a slippery slope where it would be nice to track it on a whole because I think we're going to see it.
Well, I think we can still track it as a whole. Yeah. It's just how we're presenting it in this budget. We can still track that.
Okay. Yeah, the idea is to, and again, this is a budget and it was based on the actual first 6 months of actuals in for 2015 and then annualized and applied to 2016. So these aren't hard, fast allocations of their salary. This is just an estimate of what their work may be or could be for 16 and what will, you know, 16 goes forward, you know, the actual time spent in each of those areas will be affected in the courts. So we'll get a better sense, we'll have a year of experience after that, so. And just getting back really quick to the revenue projections, I'll correct this for the next meeting. There was three revenue line items that I did not update when I had finished this revision of budget, and that was the permanent mortgage, which was increased about $2,000, the shipyard revenue, which was increased about $10,000, and the permanent mortgage had been taxing, which was increased about $7,000. I apologize for that.
I'm sorry, where was that missing in the first column?
So in the first column, mm-hmm. Right, and then it would just be reflected in the rest of the columns mm-hmm. too, with the percentage of increases. But I will update this for the public meeting one. So what I have next is the cash flow projection. This was the template put together by the Jays, which I appreciate. So it's a way of looking at our reports that we normally do, but then throwing in a component of so throwing in the non-operating, just to see how the cash flows for the court. And so this is based on the second draft operating budget. And as you can see, it's got listed the major activities report on the left with their revenues and expenditures and depreciation and the A&G with the income or loss, and then the allocated interest expense on the debt service, and then the net income. And below that is the environmental maintenance and the A&G. And then the cash flow projection down at the bottom, so you have that $103,000 loss that's showing on the projected operating budget. And then the estimated ending cash is $12,315, which basically this is what's in the 2015 budget. Again, I really wanted to put together a more solid projection, but I didn't have the time to do that because I think it's important. Anyway, so this is $2,119,000. That is the actual 2015 estimated ending cash, less grant funds of $113,000. Because if you look at the 2015 budget, they included the whole boat ramp expansion grant revenue in the non-operating of $339,000. And it's estimated that we'll be at about two-thirds actual. So that's about $113,000 that will be in 2016. So I removed that from the estimate there. You add in the net income, which is actually a loss. You add back depreciation because it is a non-cash activity. And then you reduce it by principal payments on the debt service with an increase in cash flow of $823,000. So the estimated ending cash for 16 would be $2.9 million. And then over on the left on the bottom, I just wanted to throw this in. This is the reserves that we have currently. And these are estimated ending cash reserves for 2015, not 16. And the Boat Haven Reserve is estimated to be $12,315, $747,050. And then the Contingency Reserve, the Hazardous Waste Reserve, and the Unemployment Reserve for a total of
$857,850. So out of these reserves, what's paying for the boat ramp expansion?
Just general, as far as I know.
So that's coming out of the Boat Haven Reserve, is that right?
No.
That's a commission receipt. So if you look, if we're going to have $2.9 million, we have $857,000 in reserved accounts, it still leaves us $2.1 million in cash. It'll be a commission decision whether you want that $150,000 to come out of that $2.1 million or the $747,000.
And what's the reserve for Boat Haven Reserve?
That's the million-dollar question. There are some that believe it's just for dock replacement. There are some that believe it's for the entire Boat Haven facility. I can't even weigh in on that.
Was the, I mean, what did it say?
The resolution said just Boat Haven. It did not say docks. It did not say shipyard. It didn't say anything.
Yeah. Actually, did you distribute that? Somehow I got it looked up in the original meeting that where it was discussed, and it did say Boat Haven. And I think that even inferred even uplands, you know, like parking and so forth like that.
Another thing to note on the reserves, I know that that $100,000 for contingency and hazardous waste, Larry was talking about having a reserve of $200,000 for an emergency. So just consolidating the contingency and hazardous for and increasing it by $100,000 so that we would just have in reserve $200,000 in case of an emergency. So that would be an emergency. We'd have to be, you know, decided by commission, but.
How about insurance? Can we insure for an emergency like that?
Well, we are insured for most of our assets.
But there's certain things our insurance won't cover, like breakwater breach, for example. That's going to come right out of our cash. Say we had a storm like we did a number of years ago, and remember when this, there's no insurance for that.
Yeah. But if we had a, you know, like a major spill is what we're talking about in terms of these two. Whether we're 100 or 200, we're still going to turn that into the insurance company.
It would depend who is responsible. If it was the boat, obviously it would be his insurance. Spill. Or if it was Eric, the field doctor, it would be his insurance, but all of our assets are insured.
But, and there again, if you're waiting for insurance and you have to do it for cash, you're going to have to go through that whole process, especially if you have to, if you're subrogating.
So if we get some revised figures when we change our rates, that net income is going to probably go away from the red, depending upon what kind of rate adjustments we come up with in the future.
Pardon
me?
Because that's basically this $823,000 that we're showing as additional cash flow, one assumes will be taken up by the capital projects. We don't know if they are yet, right?
Right. And probably a lot of those won't be covered by grants because they're not new capital.
But we could have. Point is that we could still do $1 million basically worth of work based on the budget, still have the same amount of cash. If we, again, assuming what Steve says is that, you know, we're going to raise the rates to really have this, you know, the net income of zero. So I guess we're not getting that.
This is a very good page. This is very interesting.
Yeah.
I really appreciate this. Thanks for the suggestion, Ron. Yeah. Yeah.
Would it be helpful for the commission to quantify some of these percentages, you know, to say, okay, we're looking at permanent mortgage. This is what 2% increase would be on a third of the budget. And this is what, you know, if I'm likely guessed, you know, would that help at all?
Yes. Well, sure, definitely.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. Are we saying the staff will take on, you know, maybe instead of doing this, I mean, I don't know if this is too much work or not. Instead of doing this just as across the board, maybe make a stab at saying, maybe we'll hit the RVers a little harder and do this and do that, or?
We have a few suggestions of where we think increases would be prudent.
Yeah, well, specifically to try to determine the market rather than just a blanket percentage.
So we're working on a survey of boat ramps, trying to fix that price. I think in here we've assumed a $70 ramp rate. So we're still working on that process. I will do the local marinas, make sure, and I'll actually do the local boatyards to see, you know, where we are in the river.
In the past, I've heard that's kind of mission impossible for the 330-ton lift, but there's got to be a way, some sort of correlation.
Oh, for trying to get comparisons?
Yeah.
I wish Platypus would be more cooperative. They, rightly so, because they're a company that does work on a boat, they won't publish their haul-out rates if it's included in the price of what they do. But they literally won't even talk to us and tell us what their rate structure is. And they're really the only 330-ton lift close by. So we'll work on that.
You're still mad at us. Well, and the other one is the, like, what's the big yard up in Alaska that just opened up with 300-ton lift?
Seward's got pretty.
Yeah.
Seward.
It's north of Ketchikan.
Kodiak has a 500-ton.
Kodiak.
Kodiak got the 500-ton.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Isn't that a new yard? Yeah, Kodiak.
And they're pushing hard.
Yeah, and they're pushing hard.
And I can't speak for any other yards, because as far as I know, they don't, but it's the Shipwrights Co-op, I have observed, has made a lot of trips to Alaska to work on boats.
Mm-hmm.
And not, we're not talking little jobs.
Yeah.
So do you see that as, dwindling over time, that we're just going to have to go out to
I see, as Jim says, that's good competition for us, and it's, I mean, it's based upon a lot of different things. Fuel prices, for one, just wear and tear on crews and people bringing the boats back and forth. Maybe weather change makes a difference because they get better weather days there. I don't know. There's a lot of things that could fishing prices, obviously, they can move the boat up there. Moorage is much cheaper.
There are two boats that are dropping off in Canada.
I couldn't hear you, Rick.
Sorry?
Can you speak up?
Two boats in Canada?
There's two fishing boats dropped out into the there's a bay there just north of Vancouver that has a really small cost.
Yeah.
They will be there this year.
Well, the Canadian dollar down, it's going to be a destination for people. We need to know that people are going to go to Canada to get work done.
Yeah.
It's really cheaper.
Yard and Souk, isn't there a big Yard and Souk too?
Yeah.
That's coming out there. An American that's coming out there. Yeah. No one's going.
Okay, do you have any more?
Nope, that's it. Do you have any questions?
Any questions? Any more? We're waiting for some, I guess, some figures. Okay, well, I think this was an informative workshop.
Yeah.
Okay, with no further discussions, we'll go ahead and adjourn this meeting and reconvene at 1:00 for the business meeting.